If you're enjoying this podcast, please leave us a review and tap the follow button so that you never miss an episode.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another Monday, the best night of the week. It is time for this week's episode of RFRX, your prescription for coping. I'm Kara. I'll be your host. And I have with me returning co-host, who is loved by Satan, it appears, according to her background.
Satan loves Helen. Me very much.
Helen, how's it going?
Good.
That's a new background.
Yeah, I know. Listen, it's Barbie pink, so it's very girly, but also badass, you know, which is just me in a nutshell.
So. I appreciate that. Yes, that is true. Yes. And 20% cooler for anyone who
It is 20% cooler. That's right. You know, if you want to be 20% cooler, Satan can be your daddy.
Wow. Hey, that's a deal. Now, without any further ado, it is my privilege to introduce our speaker this evening. Lucian Greaves is a social activist and co-founder and spokesperson for the Satanic Temple. Lucian has been involved in numerous legal efforts, advocating for the acceptance of non-theistic religious exemption and privilege, secularism, and fighting against theocratic encroachments on civil liberties. The organization is best known for its ongoing legal efforts to place a satanic monument next to the Ten Commandments, on monuments on public grounds, and to oppose reproductive rights restrictions nationwide. Lucian has been featured on numerous national and international news programs and was in the documentary film Hail Satan. Lucian, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us. And you are free to unmute at any time.
Golf clap.
I think you're free to unmute. Let me make sure that you do. There you are. Welcome. How are you doing this evening?
Not bad. How are you?
I am also not bad. I am super excited to be here and so glad we get a chance to have this conversation with you. I know you are very busy with all of your work and activities, so we certainly appreciate you taking the time to come and chat with us us all about it.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Well, I guess first and foremost, for people who aren't familiar with who you are and what you do, could you tell us what exactly is the Satanic Temple and why in the world would that be relevant to folks who have left other religions?
Well, we are a non-theistic religion. We're a religious non-theistic satanic organization. And for a lot of people who have left some of the traditional religions, they really found a home here where they don't have to feel obligated to at least say they believe things that are intellectually insulting to them or defy reality as they know it. Satanism, of course, isn't for everybody. It just doesn't resonate with some people. But I think we have really established a solid foundation for a lot of people who often have felt alienated by traditional religions or religious organizations. And I think, you know, as the question of what the Satanic Temple is, it is a religious organization that is a home for a community of people who embrace our tenets and embrace the idea of Satanism. But I think outside of that, most people know us for our legal efforts to uphold pluralism and equality. And we're really fighting to kind of get equal religious recognition for ourselves in the world so that it isn't a one-way battle, religious liberty. We have religious liberty oftentimes now being presented and defined in a way that is exclusively privileges one particular religious viewpoint with remarkably little pushback most of the time. And we found that all we have to do sometimes is demand equal treatment, equal access in public forums and other such things to really raise hell with people, but hopefully make them think a little differently about what religious liberty actually means.
That is an excellent point that we should probably come back to again later, as far as what that does actually mean. But you mentioned some tenets, and I know there may be people who are wondering, you know, what in the world would the tenets of Satanism be? And are they gonna be something that I agree with or not? Could you break down a few of them for us?
Yeah, we advocate for compassion and empathy, bodily autonomy, science as the arbiter of truth claims. And we keep these things rather general flexible to change. In fact, one of our tenets is that we don't really write things in stone, but that we follow the best available evidence at any given time. And even the tenets themselves are subject to change. And that we think is a very important point. We think people should embrace evolution, not just in the biological sense of defying a creation myth, but evolution in the sense of innovation and social change and reform, finding the best ways to maximize human happiness and dignity. And that, I think, dogmatically non-dogmatic, is probably the best type of religion that we can hope for people to maintain.
I like that, dogmatically non-dogmatic. Love it. Well, and I've heard you mention before and on other platforms, and it kind of made me chuckle when you've said that the Satanic Temple doesn't exactly have all of its members having a concept of a personal Satan, which I thought was pretty funny. And by that, you mean that it's non-theistic, right? So where does the figure of Satan fit into all this? It's not someone that's being worshipped per se, right? It's more symbolic?
Right. Well, non-theistic, obviously, we mean that we don't believe in supernaturalism. Mm-hmm. We don't believe in a literal personal Satan. But that said, you know, most of us grew up in this kind of Christian, or as they like to say, Judeo-Christian environment, and we're steeped in this indoctrination telling us that that was the morally correct way to be. And that really had a powerful effect in shaping our perception of the world, whether we came to disbelieve or not. And when you come to disbelieve and embrace the idea of Satan, even in a non-theistic way, people tend to assume that that just means you're only doing that to provoke people on the outside, that you're only doing that to piss off the Christians or whatever else. And that's, I mean, for some people, that might be what it is. But for other people, it's much more personal than that. To us, there's something fundamentally wrong with this foundational myth that so many adhere to, of this idea of worshiping this petty autocrat that they call Jehovah, mythological or not, that has ramifications for everything in the world. And we see it affecting everything in the world. And we see, metaphorically, these stories having a whole lot of meaning in that regard. We kind of see the actions of Jehovah and his followers, if you're going to kind of break things down into mythological components and contextualize the world in that way. And you see a real importance in seeing the other side of that story and realizing that if you're looking at the story, at least from the side of Milton there on, developing that notion of the rebel against tyranny, that a much better foundational myth is the one of Satanism. And beyond that as well, sometimes people come out of religion, but they're still very scared of the idea of Satan and the idea of Satanism, and still really bothered by iconoclasm and disturbed by seeing things like inverted crosses and inverted pentagrams and things like that. And there again, people make the assumption that these things are utilized just to piss off other people. But for us, these things can be very cathartic, at least at first, and it can feel very liberating to embrace that. And for lack of a better term, it can feel really quite transcendent to embrace blasphemy and feel that you've really then moved beyond. And people, when they usually first start engaging in Satanism, it's very important to them to do these blasphemous things, engage in black masses and things like that. But after a while, you start developing your own affirmative values, but that can still be important to you, that symbolic structure, that kind of contextualization for your community. And that's where it comes in for us. That's where its meaning is. Mm. And I think for us, it's every bit as important to our community as the fundamentalist mythologies are to the fundamentalists who believe in it superstitiously.
Yeah, so that... Oh, go ahead, Helen.
I had a quick question because I know the big thing for the TSD is fighting for that separation of church and state. And I know that you're coming from that atheistic perspective, but have you met other people that actually Christian groups and religious groups that do want to ally with you as far as wanting that separation of church and state? Or do you find that you're just like a lone wolf along the way?
Christianity seems to exist on such a huge spectrum that just saying somebody's Christian doesn't really give you much information. There's a wide spectrum of political beliefs and everything else related to Christians. And we do get people who identify as Christians who will say that they fully believe in what we're doing, that we have every right to do it, and that they disagree with the Christian nationalist movement. And the Christian nationalists are just a really loud minority within a minority that has made so many political gains as time has gone on. And it's probably to the detriment of Christianity overall that they've made this kind of headway. I mean, I feel like they're trying now for full-on theocracy, and we do what we can to reassert pluralism and actual religious liberty. But we are certainly open to working with others wherever they are. And we really do respect everybody's religion to the degree that they practice it personally and don't try to impose it upon everybody else. Mm-hmm. And in that way, we don't care whether somebody's Christian or not. But at the point where you have laws being established that are clearly meant to placate a superstitious minority, that's where we have value mm-hmm. in the sphere of litigation.
Sense. So, and I know we'll get on a little later to hearing about some of that litigation and those efforts that you have been working on, which I'm really excited to talk about. But I was reminded a few minutes ago when you were speaking about people kind of getting some catharsis out of some of the iconoclasm and sort of blasphemy that comes with this, to get over maybe a fear of hell or things like that that they were learned or had put upon them in their previous traditions. And I wonder if this would be a good time to look at the results of our poll. Do y'all want to see what people said about that? All right, I will share it. So we asked, okay, the first question was just asking how familiar people are with the Satanic Temple, and about 25% of people said they know all about it or are even a member. 43% of people were familiar with it. 18% of people have heard of it but weren't really sure what it's all about. 3% said wasn't that a thing in the 1970s, and 13% had no idea. Okay, so then the second question that I thought was interesting was, on a scale of 1 to 5, how scary is the concept of Satan to you? And I know that's one of the things that we get a lot of people calling into the helpline about, is fear of hell, fear of Satan, things like that. And so in this group, 5% of people selected answer choice 1, extremely scary. 3% answered choice 2, 8% answered 3, 18% picked 4, and 68%, the overwhelming majority, selected answer choice 5, which was not remotely scary. So that's actually interesting to me. I was thinking the numbers might be a little bit higher. Huh. Well, I can certainly understand the appeal of something like this as someone who, coming out of a very fundamentalist Christian religious tradition, was taught to be very afraid of hell and of Satan. And that was one of the things that I actually kept me for years from saying openly that I was an atheist, because of that sort of visceral lingering fear. So do you get a lot of people who join the Satanic Temple specifically to try and address or confront that fear, kind of like, you know, getting over a phobia through exposure or something like that?
You know, people come from all over the place and all different angles, and it's fascinating to see how many different types of people I can run into when I do lectures and other such things. I've gone to lectures in Mormon country and had people come up to me and say that they converted to Satanism while out on the missions. And I mean, without transition, just straight over. And that seems like quite a large step, but for them, maybe not. And we have people who come to us from being lifelong atheists, thinking that they would never find value in identifying with anything religious, even having some type of religious context, anything, but they didn't find that set of that kind of community necessarily with some of the atheist groups they were in, and they really appreciate us for what it is. We have other people who grew up in strict evangelical or Catholic backgrounds, and they came to disbelieve as time went on, and they felt really heartbroken about losing the community that they had, the friendship, the feeling of community that they had with the people in the religious group that they left, and they felt like they might never find that again, but they did find that with us. And it's really gratifying to hear their stories. And in fact, right now, we've solicited people to send us their conversion stories on video from 1 to 3 minutes that we'll put on our platform, the Satanic Temple TV, just to hear what some of these people's stories are, just to get a hold of it. I think it's really ripe territory for more sociologists to look at and things like that, because of who I am and what I'm doing within the organization, I'm not really a credible voice as an outside researcher on this kind of thing either. I'm in the center of the storm.
Fair enough. Yeah, it might be more impactful coming from an a more objective source, but I think you're right. I love the idea of listening to stories in that way to just learn about where people are coming from. My background is in the social sciences, so I'm a little biased too, but I think that's a wonderful project. I'm excited to watch that when you get it all put up there. Okay, so some people may be wondering or may have a preconceived idea or a story that they've been told, which is probably incorrect, of how people practice Satanism. What does one do? I imagine it's not all eating babies and sacrificing goats, as people tend to imagine.
Well, and not to get too deep into it, but from a sociological perspective, I think it's really interesting that our ritual practices were something that was really important to the community that developed around us, and wasn't something we imposed upon people. We never said to people that they need to do a particular rote procedure 3 times a day or anything like that. And even with rituals, they're very malleable to creativity and sometimes created in the moment for the specific event to kind of anchor an event in time and commemorate something. People often say they don't understand the idea of non-magical rituals, but I'm calling bullshit on that. Of course you do. You go to weddings, you go to funerals, you see, you know, birthday parties even. These things are important to you. Like these are ways to recognize things. Like I said, anchor something in time and commemorate things and give some things the solemnity of and dignity that you feel it deserves. You know, and so I think everybody engages in certain types of rituals, and it's just interesting to me to see how we never kind of dictated that from on high, but people in the Satanic Temple all seem to understand that that is how ritual really worked out. And I almost feel like that kind of evolution sociologically is kind of outside my pay grade. And in certain ways, I'm observing these things happen without being the author of them. And I'm proud of that, because that's the way it should be. That's in line with our anti-autocratic philosophy to kind of see how these things develop. And that's just one of those things. Ritual wasn't a guarantee when we were beginning that that would be an important component to people. People who had come out of religion, people who were non-believers, people even embracing the idea of non-theistic religion. But that has been very important to people. And some of the rituals, like destruction rituals, which might sound like it's kind of a brutal and savage thing, but really it's supposed to be a cathartic thing in which people are acknowledging something that they would like to get rid of in their life or in their consciousness or whatever else. And you know, Shiva Honey, one of the people who develops a lot of our rituals, was doing this kind of destruction ritual event at our headquarters one time. Mm-hmm. People brought in these little mementos that they burned in a little bowl, and there was words said and things like that. And to some people, that was meaningful enough that they broke down in tears, and they had it was a very kind of therapeutic and cathartic moment. And again, I can't stress enough that I can't take credit for any of that. That's just something that's developed around us. And I think I find it as fascinating as anybody who would on the outside.
Like, I do appreciate that you said something about ritual, because we get a lot of people in our community that they want to still want to pray. They still want to, do these rituals, and they're like, well, I've deconstructed, and can I still do these things? And it's about a lot of our rituals about are binding people together. And also it's an emotional, psychological release of emotions. That's very, very important to people. It can connect people with their past, if it's like a tradition that happened year after year with like family. So, and like give honor to the people that came before them. And I think, like, as a former pagan, I love ritual, and it's something I do like to participate in. I just don't associate anything supernatural wooey about it anymore. And I think that's really important within these communities, especially those are deconstruction and people that are leaving religion, to go, no, you can still pray, you can still do these things and not think anything exists outside of reality, so I really appreciate you saying that, and that it is a part of, the TSD, and people do get a lot out of it. So, I really appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the background of this organization. What prompted, now you're a co-founder of the Satanic Temple, is that correct, Lucian?
Yes, yeah.
Yes.
And okay. We started in about 2013, 2014. Yeah, we celebrated our 10-year anniversary at our SatanCon conference back in April, I believe that was. And I'd always had an interest in Satanism. I always kind of identified as that in the background, but didn't feel a need to come out that way publicly, because I'm also well aware of the satanic panic of the 1980s and 90s, and how people's lives have been ruined on the accusation of Satanism alone. So when I say that we put together the Satanic Temple so we could do the types of things that we're doing with litigation and other such things, that's not to say that that's the reason I became a Satanist or the reason people necessarily identify as Satanists, but it's the reason we organize. And, the purpose of having an organization was to act in an organized way towards achieving certain goals. And to that end, we really wanted to put forward these fights that we're fighting now to advance pluralism and other such things. And I think what people are probably most familiar with our abortion clinic, we have an abortion clinic. I don't even know if you know it, because that got such little coverage. But we originally started out, there was a Ten Commandments monument being put up in Oklahoma, and they made the argument that it wasn't an Establishment Clause issue because it was a private donation from one of the politicians in the legislature, and it was on public grounds. And so, they opened it up as a public forum. So we applied to put up a monument of our own. The Supreme Court in Oklahoma ended up deeming the Ten Commandments monument there illegal, had it taken down. So we immediately moved that fight over to Arkansas, where they're doing the same thing. And the language in the bill that allowed for the Ten Commandments monument in Arkansas was the same. It was a template. This was all part of a Project Blitz type of push to give politicians fill-in-the-blank bill mill material, and then push these things forward. And they put up a Ten Commandments monument there. And we've been litigating that for so long now, but we're coming to the end now. I think if it goes to trial, I think it needs to go to trial in October. And it might not go to trial because we all turned in our motions for summary judgment. Every plaintiff and defendant turned in their their motions for summary judgment. And I really think that this is a case that could likely be decided on summary judgment very soon because none of the facts are actually being contested. I really don't know why it would go to trial. And I feel really good about our odds in Arkansas. I think the judge is good. And I think the Ten Commandments there will come down. But unfortunately, I'm not as confident that that won't be overturned on appeal. It could go to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court could decide that, yes, now at this point, you can have a standalone Ten Commandments monument against all other precedent because I don't have to explain to you the disposition of the Supreme Court now.
Yeah, we know. We know.
Yeah.
Am I happy about it? No, fuck no.
Yeah, that must be interesting to be involved in these legal projects that go on for years and years and years and have to consider the fact that the makeup of the courts may change over the course of time that you're involved in these cases. Does that affect your strategy at all, or the way you approach these issues, or is that not something that you would talk about while litigation is ongoing?
You try to consider everything as you go on, but at a certain point also, it's a really touchy thing. You don't want to create bad precedent, but also if you're not exercising your rights, you've already lost them. So the question is, do you wait or do you fight now because it could be more relevant now? I mean, we've chosen the route where we're fighting about everything we can for the resources we have. But I think one of the most disappointing things is to see that people's interest just seems to be waning. Like I said, we opened up an abortion clinic and the media wasn't terribly interested in it at this point. They were far more interested in the Baphomet monument thing. And when we lose in the courts, we've oftentimes had judges invoke ridiculous technicalities or give non sequitur rulings against us. And we found it all too common that on our side of the issue, people are just willing to accept that we fucked up, that we were wrong about how to fight this, or that we're wrong about the law. Mm-hmm. And the ramifications of that are people just accepting that we don't really have equal rights, that religious freedom doesn't mean that we are, we can be equally treated to evangelical voices in the public forum or whatever. And that, I think, is a large part of the problem of why the Christian nationalists are doing so well. They don't tend to do that, They really unify on singular issues and they narrowly focus on them. They get up early and they vote and everything. And on our side of it, I feel like people are much more apt to try to turn any effort into all efforts at once and lose focus and are too quick to be demoralized and give up. And I really think we can't let that happen.
That's a really good point. Mm-hmm. I like what you said about if you're not exercising your rights, you've already lost them anyway. Mm-hmm. I never thought about it that way before, but yeah, you're right. Wow. So, okay, what are some of the things that you are proud of having accomplished with the Satanic Temple? I know you mentioned that sometimes it doesn't get covered in the media because they're... I can understand that might be a thing that would be a difficult narrative to make into a 30-second soundbite to explain to people the nuances of, okay, you thought you hated Satan, but we're going to tell you something good that the Satanic Temple did. Get ready for this in 30 seconds or less. But what are some of the headlines or the soundbites that you wish had gotten out there about some of the things that have been accomplished?
Well, I think what I'm most proud of is what I was kind of alluding to this earlier, that, people have found a community with us when they thought they would be denied one when they were leaving other religious organizations, or if they grew up atheist and didn't quite understand the appeal. But there's a lot of people who feel like they were discarded by traditional religions because of who they were to begin with, people in the LGBTQIA+ community. And and others who just felt that they not only didn't have a place in these traditional religious organizations, but that they were actually held in contempt by them, that there was a hostility against them. And they certainly never thought they would find something like a sense of religious community outside of maybe just an identitarian community based upon whatever it was that had them separated from these traditional religious organizations to begin with. And some people are kind of moving beyond some of those very specific narrow identitarian things and moving more, you know, I mean, they might still belong to communities that focus on that, but then it's also nice to belong to a religious community in which, you know, there's a place for that, and there's a place for many other things. And maybe that's not a primary thing. Maybe it is sometimes for certain subgroups, but in any case, they know there's a whole religious community for them in which there's never going to be a question that they're accepted for who they are.
Oh, that's great. I love that. Well, and speaking of community, you mentioned earlier briefly in passing about SatanCon, and I'm thinking about how our RFR excursion is coming up in a few weeks, which I'm super pumped about. I don't know if we have any spaces left in it, but if you're not signed up to come, everyone sign up now if there's any space left. But I am dying to know what happens at SatanCon, and does anybody show up thinking it's SantaCon? Because that seems like it would be hilarious to me.
It would be a great mistake if somebody thought they were going to SantaCon and ended up at SatanCon. But SatanCon, we had about 600 ticketed attendees come and show up, and probably about 1,000 protesters and non-ticketed people outside screaming and holding up signs with pictures of aborted fetuses and angry messages against homosexuality and just the kind of religious hysteria you might expect. We also had Christian nationalist Sean Foyt claim that he had put secret agents into our conference and managed to convert somewhere around 100 people without us noticing it. A whole sixth of our audience before SatanCon was over, he claimed were changed and had given their souls to Christ. And kind of an interesting thing there is I didn't really know a whole lot about him before that. And then I came to see that he was, he's a Christian musician, and he's been playing all the state capitol buildings, and GOP politicians have been grandstanding and allowing him to play in these capitol rotundas and play these shows. And I saw that and I thought, well, I'm a religious leader and I have a band. So we decided, like, based on Sean Foyt's Let Us Worship tour, is what he calls this Capitol Building tour, we're doing the Let Us Burn tour with my band Satanic Planet. And on September 28th, we are playing in the Indiana Capitol Rotunda. And honestly, I thought we'd have to take that straight to litigation. And I was, it was almost a little disconcerting when they first said, we don't allow that kind of thing in the Capitol. And we sent a YouTube video of Sean Foyt doing his show, and we said, whatever he got, we want one of those. And then they got back to us and they said, all right, you're good to go. And then I thought, oh shit, now we have to do that. So we'll see how that goes. I think that, you know, the potential for a mob scene is probably pretty high, but we hope it goes well. We're working out the acoustic set, which is really different for us now. So it's going well. As long as the performance is uninterrupted, it should be a good show.
Well, I am excited to know about that. I did not realize that was a thing, and we're going to need you to share some links with us about that and where people can find that. So please feel free to advertise that, because that sounds awesome. Okay, I love it. Wow, that is a whole new layer that I didn't even realize. Okay, I'm excited.
It's an onion, Cara. It's an onion.
It's an onion, yes. It's peeling back the layers. Okay.
Yes.
I love it. Yes, this is exciting. All right, refocusing. We can do this. That's awesome. Okay, moving on from SatanCon, although I really don't want to have to move on from that topic because that just sounds hilarious. Not hilarious. I mean, it's just, I love it. Just like, I'm thinking about the coverage that would have gotten in the news. And I'm sure it did. Were they there covering it?
Well, all the fundies were talking about it. Like, if you just put in SatanCon fundies into your YouTubes and they were reacting to it. And it's funny as shit, like them freaking out. It's amusing.
I didn't understand it. I didn't understand it because I thought everybody would be freaking out, like I said, about the abortion clinic we opened up in New Mexico. Right. It's a telehealth abortion clinic, but still, nonetheless, I think that's huge news. And very minimal coverage of that. And then we were doing SatanCon, and I didn't see a point in that kind of coverage because I don't even know how that's alarming to people. I think people by now know that there's people who self-identify as Satanists. So the idea of them having a conference, I don't think is that outrageous. There's all kinds of conferences. I guess people just don't understand what conferences are. There's conferences for every kind of niche paraphilia or whatever else. So I did not understand why there was such a public interest in the fact that we were having a conference of all things.
It's just that he's so easy to hate, I guess. If they got really mad about something like the abortion clinic, then they would have to actually have a conversation about what they were mad about. But I guess everybody can agree to get mad at Satan.
Everyone can yell, agree to that. But you can yell at a supernatural figure and not face any consequences, Kara, really. Just get mad at the people that worship him, quote unquote.
Right. That's wild. Well, okay, now that I know that SatanCon is a thing and there's a band, my social calendar is filling up as we speak. Are there books? Can you give us any book recommendations?
There's books, not that I've written yet, but there's books. There's Compassionate Satanism by Lilith Starr, which is a really good book. Shiva Honey's put out a couple books, who I mentioned before, books about ritual and other such things. And we have a little library section on our website in the drop down menu. And there's more coming out. One of our members just wrote a book about a specific satanic panic case in Ohio during the 80s. And there's a book about us, Speak of the Devil, by Joe Laycock, who's a professor of religions in Texas. And there's a book coming out by Oxford University Press, Satanism, A Reader. It's coming out next month. And I have a lengthy article at the end of it.
Ooh, okay. I'm going to put some of those resources together and see if we can make a list for people who want to read more. We're readers here. We get excited about books. And when I say we,
you
I mean
read.
Like
mainly I audio.
But hey, that counts. That counts as reading. Yes. Okay. Well, I'm excited to know about that to add to my ever-growing list of books that I will never finish reading, but I'm always glad to add to it. Okay. So moving on from that, what can you tell us about any projects that you're currently working on? Any new activism or...
That's what I was going to ask.
Let me shut up. Helen, do you have any questions you'd like to ask Lucien?
Hey, Lucien, is there any new projects or advocacy that you're working on?
There's always people sending us new problems to see if we can take them on. Because people, outside the Satanic Temple seem to think of us more of as a litigation group. And honestly, we tend to forward a lot of that stuff to Americans United or the Freedom From Religion Foundation because they seem more appropriate. And we work with them as well, oftentimes in certain cases. But, we're watching closely the schooling in Oklahoma, and it would be nice if, that happens, if we are able to start up schooling. And the problem is some of these things move glacially slow because despite what some people might think, like with our after-school Satan Club, I don't think people appreciate the fact that we actually put a lot of time into making sure that we create a curriculum that is enriching to kids and actually helpful and would make for a credible after school club rather than just sending a message by being there, which is something we're not interested in doing exclusively. We also want it to be a credible program as well. Mm. So you know, even with when some of these things play out, you know, our reaction or whatever, when we're asking for pluralism, the response might come a lot later than people will expect. So we're working on that. But right now, I'm really quite focused on this Let Us Burn tour in all the state capitals. And we've been doing Freedom of Information Act requests to find out exactly how it was that Sean Foyt got into some of these Capitol buildings where they explicitly have rules against proselytizing or these highly ideological events. And they're breaking those rules just to have grandstanding Christian nationalists come into these places and outright declare that they should take ownership of the government and other such things. And I just can't stress enough that I don't think of it as kind of a funny prank that we're asking to do what he does. I really think we're kind of on the front line of asserting pluralism and religious liberty. And this is a very important thing to do. And it's very important that people recognize that we have a right to do that, and that the stage, the public forum of the Capitol buildings is every bit as much ours as it is Sean Foyt's, and every bit as much everybody else's, if they so choose to use it too. And we have to break people out of this mindset that seems to make them accept that the Christian nationalists have an elevated voice over everybody else. And I really hope more people get in on the game, more people start recognizing these things, and more people start demanding these forums. We don't have a sense of ownership over this type of tactic. In fact, the more the merrier.
Yeah, and that's really interesting. I'm Googling now this Let Us Burn tour, and I'm just struck by the notion that, you know, as much as people like to say that the Satanic Temple has a very provocative, controversial symbol and name that, you know, brings up a lot of negative feelings and imagery for people, some of these other organizations do too. Let Us Burn, that's scary.
Well, Let Us Burn is us. Let Us Worship, oh, okay. Sean Foyt.
Oh, okay, okay. I was like, that's scary too. Okay, well, that fits then. I love it. Let Us Worship. Okay, wow. So it is explicitly, expressly religious in nature, the one that the religious group is doing. They're not pretending it's secular in any way.
They've been doing baptisms in the capitals. They've been doing religious rituals. They've been doing open proselytization. But they've just opened the door for us to do unbaptisms and for us to do our performance. And
oh, I have follow-up questions. Do you do unbaptisms, and how does that work?
We're doing unbaptisms, and we'll be doing them at the Indiana Capitol.
I've been unbaptized. Really? I have, you know, no soul.
Very good. So people have been asking if it's going to be live streams, and I'm sure it's going to be live streamed from a lot of different sources, because we can't sell tickets to this event. We had to crowdfund to be able to go over there to begin with. And how Sean Foyt gets the money, I guess I would say I have no idea, but I do have some idea. But it's certainly a lot more money than we'll ever generate. And it's, you know, I'm sure we won't possibly be able to get out to all the locations that he got out to. But we'll see. You'll be able to watch it in any case on several live streams, if not to the one we have on TST TV, which is our own streaming platform.
Excellent. Well, and awesome. Don't forget to share those links with us too, so we can make those available to people from our group here that are interested in following. So that sounds like something to look forward to. All right. Well, that was projects that are currently in the works. You've talked about some success stories. So, okay, speaking of kind of this idea that always seems to come up where people say, you know, okay, you know, this is a very controversial, provocative name for an organization. You do get a lot of backlash, right? in watching the documentary Hail Satan, there's discussion of, you know, actual death threats being made and things like that. Sorry, trigger warning for folks, we're about to talk about threats of violence. How do you deal with that? I mean, personally speaking, that must be very upsetting to be receiving that kind of hateful response to something that you're doing that's intended to be positive and helpful and good for society.
Well, I can't lie and say I didn't know that people were going to get upset. But it wasn't only just about upsetting people either, although them being upset isn't necessarily a bad thing. And I say that because, you know, hopefully it gets people to reevaluate their position on certain things. Hopefully if we can get people to start to think about evaluating people for what they actually do, what they say, what intentions they place upon their works, rather than falling back on their assumptions that are that date back to the Satanic Panic or other such things, I think we have done a real service to people. So when people say that we would be better off if we had called ourselves something else, I also don't think that we would be doing that kind of service for people. We wouldn't be making people think that deeply. We'd be allowing people to evade those kinds of questions regarding superstition and religion. And that's really the core of what matters to us. And that's something we really identify with. And it's, we wouldn't be true to ourselves if we decided, well, we're non-theistic, so we can make up an arbitrary character name that's not as meaningful to us just because it pisses some people off less. I think if we were willing to concede something like that, we also wouldn't be as adamant about standing on principle about anything else either.
Mm. Oh, that's fair. Yeah. Well, okay. Let me get your opinion on this. So one of the things that struck me as an adult rereading the Bible, and you have in Genesis, the initial creation story with the serpent and the Garden of Eden, and the serpent is by many Christians regarded as a representative of or is Satan in the story and is being deceptive. But of course, if you read the story again with fresh eyes, the serpent is not the one who's lying in that story. But my question is, at the Satanic Temple, do you regard the serpent to be Satan or some other character in the biblical text? And how is that story a part of sort of your conception of the Satan figure?
Well, I think generally Satanists feel that it was Satan that offered the apple and endorsed his knowledge. But we realize that there was a literary genesis. Satan is very obviously a literary character that grew in kind of a folkloric fashion. So when you talk about Satan as a kind of iconic character with some kind of will or intentions or whatever, you're necessarily picking and choosing, which isn't as much of a problem for the non-theist. We know what we're choosing, and we know that the Bible isn't terribly important to us in this regard. The Adam and Eve story may be, with the idea that knowledge is paramount and that there's a noble virtue in pursuing it. But, you know, I feel like for us, it begins more with Milton.
Hmm. Okay. So we need to brush up on our classics then, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, yeah. Milton on up through the romantic Satanists, Byron and Shelley and the like.
Excellent. Like, you're adding to my book list. Okay.
You're going to have a never-ending book list, Kara. I'm telling you that right now.
I already do. I add to it every week. And do you
every
think
week
I
you're like, recommend
a book.
I
want to know. I'm searching for knowledge. I mean, we're here talking to the representative of the Satanic Temple. He's got to have apples of wisdom for us. I want the knowledge. But yeah, it's hard to keep up. Okay, so I wanted that settled.
I am curious, like, how did you start this movement? You know, because prior to 2013, there wasn't really a public face for, you know, secular values in a public forum, you know, talking about, you know, the separation of church and state. So I'm just curious.
You know, before we started the Satanic Temple, I was writing a lot of articles about the satanic panic and skepticism and kind of pop science stuff. And I published some stuff in Skeptical Inquirer and in Skeptic Magazine and that kind of thing. And nobody really paid attention to it. I really didn't have a market. And it wasn't until we staged an event kind of, I guess, counter-protesting the Westboro Baptist Church. They had won in the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, you know, that they had a right to protest and be as offensive as they are. And so they do, fine.
Yeah.
And people were very upset about that. But, you know, we wanted to show them that, you know, two can play at that game. So if Fred Phelps, the founder of Westboro Baptist Church, was alive at the time, and we found his mother's grave and we did a homosexual ritual on it, and I put my nuts on her grave, and a picture of me with my nuts on her grave went out public and went out all over the place, and I was wearing these horns. And then everybody started listening to me.
I love it so much.
Then everybody wanted to hear what I was saying. Then they thought, now this is a guy we need to talk to.
That's great. You know, you figured out what it took.
I love that so much. Like, I want that to be my origin story.
Nobody took me seriously until I did that.
Now we know what we need to do to get the message out to more people about recovering from religion.
Put a nuts on a grave.
That's amazing. So then was it unexpected that you were going to get that amount of attention for that event? Were you thinking that it was just going to be kind of a thing that you did? Ha ha, here we are. And that was going to be the end of it?
Actually, for as funny as that is, I wasn't laughing at all. I thought it was, even then, I knew it would be seen as hilarious and that it would get attention from people, but it felt like suicide to me because, again, I was well aware of the satanic panic. I was well aware. Prior to that, I wasn't willing to have my face on anything. And I knew once my face was out there, people would know it was me, and that, you know, I was stuck with it, and I was stuck with having to vindicate this. So honestly, that was a very stressful time. And I felt, and it really felt like I was kind of, throwing quite a bit away. And I feel like, you know, 10 years later, if I could see back then what this would become and that it would be a home to so many people, that I would really think that this was, you know, as stressful as it still is, it feels like a best case scenario.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I mean, I have to say, I really admire your willingness to go do something, you know, to stand on your beliefs, knowing that it might very well be social suicide, but it was obviously that important to you to make that point publicly, regardless of the consequences. I mean, that's pretty hardcore.
That's ballsy, man. You know, I didn't even mean to say it that way, but it just happened.
Stop, Helen. You meant it. You meant to do that.
I did.
Helen is very witty. That's amazing.
I didn't really mean to say it that way, but thank you. I was being funny and I didn't know it.
Okay, well, y'all are on the same page here, I guess. That's awesome. Wow. Okay, so interesting. And now, you know, you make a good point that now that you are the face of the Satanic Temple, you are kind of stuck with that, right? I mean, how does that make you feel to be sort of the public representative of this very kind of scary, controversial organization? Do you feel like you're trapped into always having to now do this? Or are you still doing this because you're still passionate about it, or both, or neither?
Yeah, I still think there's a real need for all of this. But I think if I were doing anything else now, I think it would be very difficult for me to find another job. They're always going to see me. What I've been doing.
There's the weirdo.
But my dream would be to retire into doing animal rehab or something like that. I think that's my kind of secondary calling.
Oh, I love that so much. Okay, that's awesome. You better be careful. You're going to say too many nice, kind, caring things, and it's really going to tarnish your satanic image.
That's right. We're going to gush and go, oh, Lucien, you're so cool. You're such a good person.
I love that. Oh, my goodness. Okay, yeah. Call us back when you're doing that as well. I want to know everything about this satanic animal rehab. It's got to have some kind of like reverse Noah's Ark sort of name to it or something. I don't know.
Well, I think I would kind of want to be more anonymous at that point, but
yeah,
that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. The animals won't care. They won't know. So, okay. Well, what would you say are the current goals and needs, struggles of the organization? Where do you see it going 10 years from today?
You know, I can only hope that these issues that we're fighting now in litigation and these public facing things that we're doing are so much less relevant in 10 years and that there's no need for us to be doing them. I mean, that would be a highly optimistic take, but I want to, I would just like to emphasize that is optimism. I think sometimes organizations really want to hang on to their relevance by keeping up the fight sometimes and really embracing the battle for its own sake. And from where I'm sitting, that's not of interest to me at all. I would rather we win and be able to move on. Mm-hmm. And I just also think it's important to realize that if we weren't having these problems, if we weren't having the troubles with the theocrats and we weren't having our Sean Foyts that we needed to answer for, and we didn't have to worry about people like Mike Pence, we would still be here. We will still be here in 10 years as a community for each other, for the people who have found a sense of community with us and for people who really are attached to our affirmative values, because I think they'll always be relevant. You know, yeah. If there's one kind of core religious mission of the Satanic Temple, it's that eternal struggle against tyranny. And that's just never not going to be relevant in human society.
So on that note, for those of us that maybe members of the TSD or not, what would you suggest for people how they can get involved in these movements? Because we often say that it starts at home, but, you know, like for the specific stuff you do and resources or anything like that, like what can we do, you know, in our own communities to kind of push against this bullshit that keeps happening?
Well, I've been more and more critical of progressive activism lately, and I think we need that. I was really disappointed in things like the Science March and Women's March, not because people came out and they mobilized, but because there was no ask, right? And I think the days are over in which you can take to the street and hold up signs and politicians get panicked and think they need to do something of their own free will to placate everybody. At this point, having protesters out can be positive propaganda for somebody like Trump, who thrives on pissing off the other side. And now we're so highly polarized, so many people are going to take pride in pissing off their opposition. And we really needed to have things like model legislation of our own, petitions, needed to call out politicians by name, make them answer for it. Because if you're not asking for something, you're going to get exactly what you asked for, nothing. And that's what we're seeing happen. And I think we need to move past that. And I think amongst people who really identified with the punk movements or otherwise felt alienated sometimes in their youth, there was really a feeling of displacement from the normal processes of government. And, you know, we kind of looked down on the nerds who would go to the city council meetings, school board meetings and things like that, and thought we didn't want any part of the system. I just don't think we have that liberty anymore. And I feel like the Christian nationalists go so far because they're really trying, making efforts to get into office, to change the laws at the lowest levels to the highest levels. They're always the ones pushing hardest to get on school boards. They're always the ones loudest at the city council meetings and other things. And honestly, we need to start doing those things. We have to start going out and being active in these things and really trying to move the laws into a place where we want them, or trying to block laws that are diminishing our civil liberties when we see them pop up, rather than resigning ourselves and saying that, you know, we need to consider bad rulings by the court as being something that's etched in stone. That's one thing the right just doesn't do as much as we do. They seem to see that a law is a dialogue, and that even with Roe versus Wade, they didn't give up and they got it to be overturned when we felt that that was so established and entrenched that it could probably never go away. And we see all too clearly now that, you know, nothing necessarily lasts forever. And this really takes maintenance. Our civil liberties take maintenance, and we need to fight for them all the time. And we really have to get active.
I think also too, like, and I have this criticism about the progressives, that we are so good at pointing out problems, but actually doing something about them can be very frustrating, because we're always debating, even within our in-groups, that you're not seeing the forest from the trees. And can we all agree that everybody should have human rights? Just great. Okay, let's fight for that. You know, and it has to start at your local level, you know, and we tend to pay attention to national stuff, but it starts really in your own community if you actually want to see progress and change. And, you know, and I find that a little bit frustrating with progressives, that they, you know, are talking about social issues and things like that, which I think are important to talk about. But like, if you're not doing anything about it, then why are we having an argument about it? That's kind of how I feel about it. Maybe I'm getting old and cynical. I don't know.
No, surely not.
I'm not.
No, you do lots of things too. So I think probably most of the people here with us tonight are people who are interested in this kind of stuff and who are readers. There's a lot of people who read a lot about
this. We have a very smart audience. Themselves.
We do. We have a very smart audience. But I mean, I think those are all really good points. And you're out there on the front lines doing it with, you know, getting the target on your back, with taking the stands that might be unpopular, that might be shocking to people, but that, you know, really make people think about why they're opposing or supporting things and why they think things are necessarily automatically bad or wrong. And I think that is excellent work that you're doing, Lucian. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. And thank you for being here. And we are getting close to time to go to Q&A. Helen, did you have anything else you wanted to ask about? Or Lucian, did you have anything else you want to talk about? I should have asked that one at a time. Let me ask everybody all at once. Do you want to talk now? Helen, do you want to ask anything else?
I am good, because we have plenty of questions to get through.
We do. Lucian, do you want to talk about anything else before we go to questions?
Nope. I want to hear what everybody else wants to talk about.
All right. Well, we will go to questions. And I have gathered up a few links that you mentioned about just the main page of the Satanic Temple, Satanic Temple TV, Satanic Planet, that we'll share with people too, so they can check those out if they want to learn more about what you've got going on. And in the meantime, okay, let's move to questions. And we still have questions coming in, so we'll get through as many as we can. And we'll see how far we get. So, okay. Helen, do you want to start?
I can read.
Okay. Yes, I know you can.
Okay. So how does Satanism compare with humanism?
You know, humanism, I think, is very similar to our brand of Satanism, but Satanism, its iconography is just kind of based on this cultural raw material that's so kind of prevalent and understood by people and kind of entrenched in their subconscious minds, because it's been beaten into their skulls since infancy, perhaps. And I think in that regard, it has almost a, it's more archetypal. It's kind of more universal and kind of more deeply entrenched, I think, in our consciousness. It when we look at Satanism and see it in contrast to what we're fighting against, the theocrats that are making such headway right now, for a lot of people, that really makes a certain amount of natural sense and really resonates with people in a way that I don't necessarily think, you know, humanism does, at least for the people who embrace Satanism. Or, you know, atheism itself, a lot of people have said in the Satanic Temple that just defines what you're not, and Satanism defines what we are. And, you know, we will never not get people who just say that they don't get it, they don't understand why it's got to be Satanism, because they agree with everything else, but the iconography, the blasphemy doesn't resonate for them. But that's, you know, that's inseparable for us. That's all a part of what this is. So, you know, we understand if that's not for you. You know, humanism is completely legitimate. For other people, that's more meaningful. Or, you know, the fact that Satanism isn't meaningful for them, you know, makes humanism a far better alternative. But just know that there are some of us for whom Satanism really does have a deep personal meaning, and it is because it's Satan and Satanism. I don't know if I just kind of talked all around that and managed.
It's always difficult to answer psychologies on this. Listen, we're all very pedantic, very like explain things way too much in this community. So, you know, I followed you, man.
Yeah, it was good. We know we're popping questions on you that you didn't have time to, you know, pull all the resources for. Let me give you a 20-minute lecture on humanism and then we'll have point by point. It's okay. You got it. Okay, let's go to the next one. And we talked about this next one a little bit already, but if you want to say more about it, you can. Someone was asking, how does the Satanic Temple deal with the public outcry when y'all do charitable acts like helping the hungry and the homeless? But I guess the question is,
well, that's one point. Those are the types of things where you just let them go, you know, because reasonable people can see how ridiculous that is. When people are actually complaining that we're trying to defend children from getting beaten in schools with like our Protect Children project because they feel they have a religious mandate to not spare the rod so as to not spoil the child. That's insane. That's absurd. And I think that only serves our ends all the better. I think people who are maybe on the fence and can see that playing out are probably then more amenable to seeing things our way. We have no trouble amplifying those voices and showing people on social media the people who are delivering their outcry against charitable acts.
Fair enough. All right, what else do we have, Helen?
Okay, so are you working with Jews who also support abortion rights on religious liberty grounds?
No, we haven't. We have not been working with any other organizations on the abortion front. And not to say that we wouldn't or won't, but it just hasn't been presented to us, and that's not something we've done. A lot of times we just kind of assume we have to strike out on our own on these kinds of things, and that people don't necessarily want the affiliation with us, which is fine. But in any way we could support anybody else also fighting for bodily autonomy, we will.
Fair enough.
Thank you. I appreciate that, man.
That's really great. I've made a couple of personal donations to y'all's fund towards that in honor of certain people I've had conversations with. And we'll leave it at that. Moving on, and that does answer a couple of other questions people were asking too about whether you work with the ACLU or HRC, is that Human Rights Council? Do you ever, I think you kind of answered that already, that you're not normally working with other organizations.
Not normally, but we are working with the ACLU now. We're working with the ACLU is representing us on a few cases where school districts have tried to deny our after-school Satan clubs in school districts where they already have evangelical proselytizing clubs. And, you know, our after-school Satan clubs, to be clear, aren't teaching Satanism. And, you know, we've actually had school districts demand that we not call it the after-school Satan club, but we, you know, we think it's really hypocritical. The idea being that the idea that, you know, we put Satanism in there is misrepresentative of what the club is, because we should be teaching, you know, some kind of religious philosophy or whatever. But, you know, according to our religious philosophy, we believe that kids should really make their own choice. And we really want to be there putting together kind of an enriching program of self-directed learning where they can learn about science and critical thinking and things like that. But we don't want them to not know that it's the Satanic Temple doing it. And, you know, that in and of itself is kind of a lesson to children that some of the assumptions being stated to them about what Satanists are might not be true. But that's as far as it goes. So they'll only get that from interacting with people who are self-identified Satanists that they know are self-identified Satanists, but are only teaching them critical thinking and science and things like that. In any case, I kind of got lost from my original point and forgot what it was, but I think it was that the ACLU was working with us on after-school Satan clubs. And we have worked with the Freedom From Religion Foundation several times in the past. We've worked with the American Humanist Association. We've worked with many others. These are always single projects. We always pair with other organizations on limited goals. You know, we don't necessarily pair with an organization just on a long-term basis, because we never know which direction they'll go.
Well, yeah, thank you. That was a good answer. And I am a firm believer that answers that include stories are the best answers. So thank you. All right, let's see. We got another one, Helen. I think that counted as mine. I checked one off as a result convoluted sentence that I asked.
So is the only reason TST uses Satan as a primary symbol of the group is to help people overcome the fear of Satan. Example, if you didn't have that objective, could you easily use Bugs Bunny or Bigfoot or the Tooth Fairy or any other imaginary entity as the primary symbol of the church?
No, I feel like there's no way I can explain this that would explain it well enough for anybody for whom, you know, embracing blasphemy as a way of overcoming superstition and religion. I mean, if that's not something that speaks to you, if you don't get that kind of, like I said, for lack of a better term, transcendent feeling that you've moved beyond that by embracing that, then it just might not be meaningful to you. But because we grew up in this society and heard of God and Satan from so early on, and probably started out early in our childhoods believing in that, it has a certain resonance for us that something made up whole cloth and presented to us later in life just never will. And therefore, you know, it just has to be Satan with us. And I just, you either feel it or you don't. I guess it's kind of the George W. Bush answer, like, Satan changed my heart, you know, and if you don't understand it, you just, I guess maybe you won't.
I love it. That is a legitimate answer. If other people can use that answer about personal experience, you can too. That's great. Okay. So someone is wondering, are you afraid that over time, the Satanic Temple will become just another religion with the problematic interpretations like what you're fighting today?
That's a very legitimate concern. And, you know, even in our short history, I think we've had to fight back against a certain amount of groupthink and mob mentality within the organization, and people trying to turn the Satanic Temple very often into just another platform through which to elevate their social media grandstanding, which is often unprincipled and doesn't think through things to the degree of, well, what if those tactics are used on the other side? And does this really follow our affirmative values, or is it just reactionary against the other guys kind of thing? And we really have had a lot of people, I think, cycle through who think that they can just kind of attach the next faddish thing to our name in order to better amplify themselves, and are sometimes disappointed when we hang on principle. But I think all we can do is be cognizant of that and hope that our future leadership is cognizant of that, and that we really do stick to clear and well-defined values and really do try to advocate for pluralism on principle, and realize that the rules and regulations that we advocate for should also be available for use by the people we disagree with. And if we can't handle that, then maybe we shouldn't be advocating for them, because I really think that we do need a set of laws that do that, that don't give the subjective liberty to our representatives to just pick and choose on a case-by-case basis, because that's authoritarianism, and that I always think is a degenerative spiral. And all I can do is really try to set the framework here and try to get people to understand that, and hope that that's what the future holds for us as well. But I think it's very appropriate to recognize that no group is necessarily above the common human social dynamics. Recently, there was a Fox News article about a teacher in Chicago who got fired for posting things on social media about worshiping Satan and having some type of psychotic disorder. And looking at the article, it was clear that the idea of Satanism was just thrown in there to kind of create clickbait. And I'm sure the school district did not fire this teacher for putting posts on social media that had anything to do with Satanism. But what this teacher did do was post that they sometimes have violent psychotic, and I might be wrong on the wording here. I don't want to, I don't want to put words in this person's mouth or make it worse than it was. But my understanding was that the post said something about sometimes having violent outbursts and hurting people against their own will. And so people concerned for their children or whatever ended up getting this teacher fired. And, you know, if you looked at the Fox story, you would think it was all about this person being a Satanist, and that's why the person was fired, when likely that had zero to do with it. But I was also getting messages from people saying, we've got to defend this person or whatever. And I don't think there was much we could do if we were inclined to. But also, we have such a large membership now that people should recognize that not all of that membership are going to be good people. Some of them are going to be psychotic. Somebody who's a member of the Satanic Temple is bound to murder somebody at some point. It's just how large the population is. It has nothing to do with kind of the moral predisposition of who Satanists are. That said, I do think that on balance, you will find better people among Satanism. And I do think that there's a social dynamic for that. I think people who identify with mainstream traditional religious organizations have a much greater deal of moral self-licensing, where they've convinced themselves that because they follow their God, because they wave a cross, that what they must be doing, what they're doing must be moral, and what we're doing must be immoral. and the symbols of morality and immorality have superseded actual moral deeds and immoral deeds. And I think those people are more likely to do immoral things because they are just convinced that they have license to, because they've already defined themselves as completely moral. And there you go. There I am being all professorial. As you said, you like, so.
Yes, I was about to say, we said we like that here. Well done. He reads his audience well. Okay, I can't remember, Helen. Is it your turn to ask a question or mine?
I think it's my turn.
I think it is too. Yes.
Okay. All right. How is the TSC currently getting along with independent abortion clinics and Planned Parenthood?
You know, we've had supportive messages from people as well as unsupportive ones. And when we get the supportive messages from people or the supportive offers from people in this business, for the most part, they want to remain anonymous. And so most of the support we've gotten from people who are already involved in other organizations that work on reproductive rights, they've been silent about it. Some have decried us because they don't think that the image of Satanists attaching themselves to bodily autonomy is a good one. But there again, I think they misunderstand us, because I think they think that what we're doing is, in our minds, strictly legal tactic, and that we don't necessarily identify with this. And to us, you know, everybody could hate us. Everybody could be against us. We're still going to believe what we believe, and we're still going to identify how we identify. And to us, this is an important fight to fight. And we hope that they appreciate that. We hope they'll be on our side. But if they're not, we just got to respectfully say, fuck them, and we're going to do what we do anyway.
Fair enough.
All right, fair.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Maybe we have time for a couple more. Let's see. Oh, I love this question from one of our regular attendees. I think it is more rhetorical than a real question, but I'll ask it anyway, and you can feel free to reply. Someone is wondering, is it because you folks are atheists that you are so wonderful?
I think that actually goes back to the idea of the moral self-licensing. I really do think there's something to that, that you see some of these people who identify so strongly with traditional and accepted religions doing such horrific things, is that they have managed to conflate the symbols of moralism, morality, with morality itself. And you are much less likely to see that kind of behavior amongst atheists, Satanists, humanists, and other non-believers. But like I also said before, that, you know, groups being what groups are, we can't delude ourselves into thinking that the Satanist is always going to be correct, or the atheist is going to be always morally superior to everybody else. You might have better luck on an individual basis sometimes with people who have an entirely different belief system. And I think now more than ever, in the polarized environment that we're in, we really need to start truly understanding what people's understandings of the facts are, making fewer assumptions, and trying to open up dialogue as much as we can.
Well, I think that is an excellent answer and probably a good note to end on. Before we wrap up, do you have any final thoughts or comments that you would like to share, though?
Well, I'll just let people know I've started writing on Substack, so check that out. I mean, most of the stuff I post is accessible without a subscription. So look me up at luciangreaves.substack.com and follow my writings.
Carl, make a link.
Yeah.
I'm making it now, and I will share that. And we usually drop these links that are mentioned in the chat at the end of the show. And then also we'll have them in the description of the show when it goes onto the podcast and the YouTube, so people can click those and
it's called the doobly-doo, Cara. It's the doobly-doo.
It'll be in the doobly-doo. Yes, correct. That is where that will go. And I will also drop it here.
So I do have one more question, and this might be a good question to ask as far as like, how do you fundraise for legal actions? And is there a place where people can donate to help the TST do the things they are doing?
Yeah, I mean, we donate for our specific campaigns. We donate, or we do fundraisers for specific projects. Despite what people might say online, that money goes directly towards the causes it's supposed to support. I am not on salary now with the Satanic Temple. So if that makes anybody more comfortable, I'm not making money from that. I make my money on subscribers from my Patreon and Substack. And we have a great record of always following through on the things we fundraise for. And if your thing is, if you would want something for your donation, we also sell merchandise. Merchandise is also our primary source of revenue, and those proceeds also go towards helping our campaigns and everything else as well. So yeah, thanks for that question.
Helen's good at the fundraising and the fundraising questions.
Yeah, I'm always trying to like, hey, chill, money, help people, yo. Yes. That's what
Excellent.
I do.
Yes.
Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, healing, and support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There, you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts, or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.